A minute or two later, Dirk paused to consider his best strategy. Rather than arrive 5 hours late and flustered, it would be better all round if he were to arrive 5 hours and a few extra minutes late, but triumphantly in command. "Pray God I am not too soon," would be a good opening line as he swept in, but it needed a good follow-through as well, and he wasn't sure what it should be. Perhaps it would save time if he went back to get his car, but then again it was only a short distance, and he had a tremendous propensity for getting lost when driving. This was largely because of his method of Zen navigation, which was simply to find any car that looked as if it knew where it was going, and follow it. The results were more often surprising than successful, but he felt it was worth it for the sake of the few occasions when it was both. Furthermore, he was not at all certain that his car was working. It was an elderly Jaguar, built at that very special time in the company's history, when they were making cars that had to stop for repairs more often than they needed to stop for petrol, and frequently needed to stop for months between outings. He was, however, certain, now that he came to think about it, that the car didn't have any petrol, and furthermore he did not have any cash or valid plastic to enable him to fill it up. He abandoned that line of thought as wholly fruitless. He stopped to buy a newspaper while he thought things over. The clock in the newsagent said 11:35. Damn, damn, damn. He toyed with the idea of simply dropping the case, just walking away and forgetting about it. Having some lunch. The whole thing was fraught with difficulties in any event. Or rather, it was fraught with one particular difficulty, which was that of keeping a straight face. The whole thing was complete and utter nonsense. The client was clearly loopy, and Dirk would not have considered taking the case except for one very important thing. £300 a day plus expenses. The client had agreed to it just like that, and when Dirk had started his usual speech to the effect that his methods, involving as they did the fundamental interconnectedness of all things, often led to expenses that might appear to the untutored eye to be somewhat tangential to the matter in hand, the client had simply waved the matter aside as trifling. Dirk liked that in a client. The only thing the client had insisted upon, in the midst of this almost superhuman fit of reasonableness, was that Dirk had to be there, absolutely had to be there, ready, functioning and alert, without fail, without even the mere smidgen of an inkling of failure, at 6:30 in the morning, absolute. Well, he was just going to have to see reason about that as well. 6:30 was clearly a preposterous time, and he, the client, obviously hadn't meant it seriously. A civilized 6:30 for 12 noon was almost certainly what he had in mind, and if he wanted to cut up rough about it, Dirk would have no option but to start handing out some serious statistics. Nobody got murdered before lunch. But nobody. People weren't up to it. You needed a good lunch to get both the blood sugar and blood lust levels up. Dirk had the figures to prove it. Did he, Anstey? The client's name was Anstey, an odd, intense man in his mid-30s, with staring eyes, a narrow yellow tie, and one of the big houses in Lupton Road. Dirk hadn't actually liked him very much, and thought he looked as if he was trying to swallow a fish. Did he know that 67% of all known murderers who expressed a preference had had liver and bacon for lunch? And that another 22% had been torn between either a prawn biryani or an omelette? That dispensed with 89% of the threat at a stroke, and by the time you had further discounted the salad-eaters and the turkey and ham sandwich munchers, and started to look at the number of people who wouldn't contemplate such a course of action without any lunch at all, then you were well into the realms of negligibility and bordering on fantasy. After 2:30, but nearer to 3 o'clock, was when you had to start being on your guard, seriously, even on good days. Even when you weren't receiving death threats from strange, gigantic men with green eyes, you had to watch people like a hawk after the lunching hour. The really dangerous time was after 4 o'clock-ish, when the streets began to fill up with marauding packs of publishers and agents maddened with fettuccine and kheer and baying for cabs. Those were the times that tested men's souls. 6:30 in the morning, forget it. Dirk had. With his resolve well stiffened, Dirk stepped back out of the newsagents into the nippy air of the street and strode off. "Ah, I expect you'll be wanting to pay for that paper then, won't you, Mr. Dirk, sir?" said the newsagent, trotting gently after him. "Ah, Bates," said Dirk loftily, "you and your expectations, always expecting this and expecting that. May I recommend serenity to you? A life that is burdened with expectations is a heavy life. Its fruit is sorrow and disappointment. Learn to be one with the joy of the moment." "I think it's 20p, that one, sir," said Bates, tranquilly. "Tell you what I'll do, Bates, seeing as it's you. Do you have a pen on you at all? A simple ballpoint will suffice." Bates produced one from an inner pocket and handed it to Dirk, who then tore off the corner of the paper on which the price was printed and scribbled IOU above it. He handed the scrap of paper to the newsagent. "Shall I put this with the other ones, then, sir?" "Put it wherever it'll give you the greatest joy, dear Bates. I would want you to put it nowhere less. For now, dear man, farewell. I expect you'll be wanting to give me my pen back as well, Mr. Dirk." "When the times are propitious for such a transaction, my dear Bates," said Dirk, "you may depend upon it. For the moment, higher purposes call it. Joy, Bates, great joy. Bates, please let go of it." After one last listless tug, the little man shrugged and padded back towards his shop. "I expect I'll be seeing you later, then, Mr. Dirk," he called out over his shoulder, without enthusiasm. Dirk gave a gracious bow of his head to the man's retreating back, and then hurried on, opening the newspaper at the horoscope page as he did so. "Virtually everything you decide today will be wrong," it said bluntly. Dirk slapped the paper shut with a grunt. He did not for a second hold with the notion that great whirling lumps of rock light years away knew something about your day that you didn't. It just so happened that the great Zaganza was an old friend of his who knew when Dirk's birthday was and always wrote his column deliberately to wind him up. The paper's circulation had dropped by nearly a twelfth since he had taken over doing the horoscope, and only Dirk and the great Zaganza knew why. He hurried on, flapping his way quickly through the rest of the paper. As usual, there was nothing interesting. A lot of stuff about the search for Janice Smith, the missing airline girl from Heathrow, and how she could possibly have disappeared just like that. They printed the latest picture of her, which was on a swing with pigtails aged six. Her father, Mr. Jim Pierce, was quoted as saying it was quite a good likeness, but she had grown up a lot now and was usually in better focus. Impatiently, Dirk tucked the paper under his arm and strode onwards, his thoughts on a much more interesting topic. £300 a day, plus expenses. He wondered how long he could reasonably expect to sustain in Mr. Anstey his strange delusions that he was about to be murdered by a 7-foot-tall, shaggy-haired creature with huge green eyes and horns, who habitually waved things at him, a contract written in some incomprehensible language and signed with a splash of blood, and also a kind of scythe. The other notable feature of this creature was that no one other than his client had been able to see it, which Mr. Anstey dismissed as a trick of the light. 3 days? Four? Dirk didn't think he'd be able to manage a whole week with a straight face, but he was already looking at something like a grand for his trouble, and he would stick a new fridge down on the list of tangential but non-negotiable expenses. That would be a good one. Getting the old fridge thrown out was definitely part of the interconnectedness of all things. He began to whistle at the thought of simply getting someone to come round and cart the thing away, turned into Lupton Road, and was surprised at all the police cars there, and the ambulance. He didn't like them being there. It didn't feel right. It didn't sit comfortably in his mind alongside his visions of a new fridge.